Awesome. Well, welcome everyone. This is our third call, and this learning event does have four conference calls, so we will have one next week too. This is our third call for RP-102 Evaluation and Recreation, hosted on the traditional territories of the Kwanlin Dun First Nation and Taran Kwachin Council. So I think, well, Deanna and Peter, you guys were on the call last week, so that you may recall. And Peter, I know you weren't feeling well, so you might not recall, and that's okay. The recording is posted. But you might recall that we went through the week two content, and there was a lot of content about developing an evaluation plan. So it introduced you to the overall process of planning and implementing an evaluation. So that whole process is captured in week two. I don't expect you to have learned it all in week two, but it's captured in those presentation slides. So if you need to go back to it, by all means, do that. And just to give you some background context, I spent a lot of time developing this learning event because evaluation can be presented in a fairly complex way. So I've tried to bring it down into something that's a little bit more step-by-step focus that you can follow along with, but it is still complicated. This is probably our most complex advanced learning event, just to put that into context. So for your RLA, Peter, you've done yours, and David, you've done yours, and Deanne and Isabel, I would totally suggest that you read what they did and what my comments are, because you will learn from that as well. Like, you'll see a difference even from what David did for his RLA last week to what Peter did. So Peter, I don't know if you looked at David's or not, but it certainly looked like you absorbed some of the information and put a lot of thought into how you were presenting what you did. So good work on that. There is some feedback there for you to work in to what you're going to do for this week. So you're going to finish the second half of your evaluation plan this week. If you haven't started it, that's all right, because this is the bulk of the required learning activities last week and this week. And then the final week is more of a reflection, like a self-reflection. So it's a little bit different, not quite as labor intensive, I guess, or learning intensive. So this week we're going to zoom in on collecting evaluation data. And one of the things that I find, and we've talked about it in the first couple of calls, is that people often get confused between the feedback forms that you use with your participants and evaluation data. Feedback you collect from your participants is one type of data. So there is a lot of evaluation data that you will want to look at. And so we're going to consider what might influence the type of data we use, what might we collect, and how might we collect it. So I'd like to do a quick round of introductions. I know there's only three of us on the call, but I do have a question for you to sort of reflect on as you do your introduction. Let me post it first so that you can think about it, and then I'll introduce what the question is. And Deanne, maybe we can start with you because you joined first, and then Peter, and then Isabel. So the question is, when you introduce yourself, just to take a moment to share your thoughts or your thinking on what a respectful evaluation looks like or how to conduct an evaluation respectfully. So two different ways of sort of thinking about it, but that word respectfully is in there and around evaluation. So, Gian, what are your thoughts?
Hey, everyone. Gian here from Kwashiukon. Conducting the evaluation respectfully. Whenever we do evaluation, so we need to take permission from the, like, let's say I'm doing the facility evaluation. In that, I need to take the permission from the owner of the building. Yeah.
So getting permission is part of being respectful with your evaluation?
Yes.
Okay. So sort of the appropriate permissions, whatever and whoever that happens to be from. Thanks, Gian. Over to you, Peter. Just a quick introduction because I think by now most of us are getting to know each other. and your thoughts about how you could conduct an evaluation respectfully, or what's involved in respectful evaluation.
My name is Peter. I'm the Active Link Coordinator for Recreation and Parks Association of UConn in Whitehorse, based in Whitehorse at least. And a good example, you actually provided me feedback on sort of the learning evaluation the leader evaluation plan part A, and it was sort of using language that is like positive and uplifting rather than sort of criticizing. So instead of saying like reducing barriers, you could say improving processes.
Yeah, and that's a really key part, especially when you're working with small communities or small organizations or individuals. So thanks for sharing that. You know, part of being respectful is recognizing that there's always going to be barriers to whatever we do, but people have strengths that they bring to that can help overcome those barriers. So if you can try and look for the building blocks, the things that you can build on, that is a very respectful way of conducting evaluation. So thanks. Over to you, Isabel, if you'd like to introduce yourself and share your thoughts on what an respectful evaluation looks like or what's involved in that.
Hi, my name is Isabel. I'm calling from Dakota Haines Junction. Respectful evaluation, I think, is to keep in mind that we want to move forward, we want to learn something. So, yeah, I totally agree with what Peter says. The language that is used is very important. Try to put that in a positive. Like, it's not, you failed, period. It's, it's how we're going to make this better next time and how we can use this as a learning opportunity. That's my
answer. Great. Thank you. That is such a great approach to bring to your evaluation. So, Peter gave a specific example and you built on that, but it's about moving forward. And we can't help people move forward or organizations move forward or communities move forward if we're critical of what hasn't worked. That's just, that puts a roadblock right there in them. So thanks for mentioning that, Isabel. Stephanie, I noticed that you joined the call. Welcome. It looks very sunny where you are. What we're doing is we're just introducing ourselves and sharing just one or two thoughts that come to mind about what it looks like when you approach evaluation in a respectful way.
I'm actually in my truck. I almost forgot about this conference, but I found myself a parking spot and I'm joining you guys.
That's great. And if you feel like you just want to listen, like if it's a little distracting, I have run conference calls in my car before, so I know what it's like. Okay. What comes to mind for you then when you think about conducting an evaluation respectfully? Just one or two things.
I would say time and place and the situation. For instance, okay, if I just had an event and I see a mom with five kids, and then I stop them, and I say, hey, you know what? I have five questions for you. Do you want to answer these right now? Because I'm doing an evaluation. So time, place, and location, and, or I could just give them the piece of paper and let them know, hey, you know what? Take this home with you and maybe look at these questions, and if you want to give me a call, well, I'll call you later when you have a chance. So I would say time, location, in space and just the appropriate time. So if there was one person who actually wants to chat with you after the event, then that would be a good time to ask that one person. So I think that would be a big, just be aware of who you're asking and when.
Yeah, and I think you can apply that to the broader evaluation too. Not just, that's a really good point. It's not just the individuals that you're talking to as part of collecting your evaluation data, it's also how you're positioning that evaluation. So I'll use one example. Sometimes I find that people want all this evaluation work done and they want it done right at the end of the year when you're trying to wrap up all your programs and do everything else. And that's really challenging. We have to give time and space for evaluation So I think you could apply that to a bigger concept, Stephanie, or also it to exactly what you're explaining. So thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Okay, so what we're going to do is we are going to look at a little bit of this week's content, and then we have a shared Google document. Stephanie, I'm not sure if it'll work for you to open it on your phone as well. I've popped it in the chat, but I'll put it back in again. If it doesn't, don't worry about it. We can make sure that, and we're just using the chat that's in the call, so I don't know if on your phone you're able to open that or not. If it doesn't work to open it, don't worry. Listening is just as important as contributing, so no worries. So if you had a look at the slides for this week, you might have noticed that slide 37 presents respectful evaluation, and it's got three really important concepts. So there's the concept of informed consent. And what that means is that you need to let people who are going to take part or share their thoughts or their stories or be assessed or whatever it is, you have to let them know the purpose of your evaluation and the commitment of time that you're asking. So that's exactly like what Stephanie was saying, right? But it could be, I'd like you to come to a focus group next Tuesday and we'll need 20 minutes of your time. If you take 2 hours, tough one, but you have to be pretty clear. Some people also, depending on what you're doing for your evaluation activities and how you're doing it, might expect an honorarium. So you have to be very clear as to whether that is part of it or not. And then you have to make it very clear that participating in an evaluation is their choice. They can choose to say, no, I don't want to share my experiences. No, I don't want to tell you anything about what worked. Or they can say, sure, I would. And if the person is a minor, or if you're going to collect data like photos, because photos are awesome for evaluation. Somebody once shared all these pictures of people with smiles on their faces at their event. What a great way of showing what people thought of that event and collecting that. But if you're going to do that and then share anything publicly, either what a youth might tell you or a photo of a youth or a child, you need to make sure you have written consent for that as well. So that's the informed consent piece. Anonymity, I struggle with that word, but basically it can be really challenging in small communities. Even in Whitehorse that's bigger, it can be challenging. Because what anonymity means is that if you collect and report information, like if you tell a story and everybody knows whose story that is, then you are not maintaining their anonymity. So you have to try and collect and report information so that individual participants cannot be identified. I'll give you an example. One of the most compelling pieces of evidence that I ever hear in recreation are times like that recreation program prevented a suicide. That just catches everybody's attention, funders, everything, but so difficult to share. When you're referring to a community or anything like that, because people are likely to know who you're referring to. So you have to be very careful. So sometimes we need to change our evaluation plan or our design so that we can make sure that individuals aren't identified. Confidentiality is a little different. Confidentiality means that you don't share any sensitive or personal information unless required by law. So, for example, if somebody shares something fairly personal, a personal experience, maybe it's a personal experience of growth in your program, you'd have to ask for their permission to share that publicly if they wanted to or not. However, on the flip side, if you had a youth who disclosed abuse, you are required by law to report that. So just be very clear on what confidentiality means within the context of evaluation. So before I move on, I just want to check, just unmute if you have any questions about the concepts of informed consent, anonymity, or confidentiality. And if not, I'll move on. Just jump in if you do.
All
Okay, I think we're good. So we'll move on to slide 38, if for those of you who have 38 open. 38 just explains that data collection, so the information and the data that you collect, will be influenced or affected by the purpose of your evaluation. So, Peter, you mentioned, you know, how we write our purpose. So if you use words like barriers, you can see the data you're going to collect is very different than processes that might be supportive. So different types of data depending on what the purpose is. You also might, your data collection might be affected by the characteristics of your participants. So Stephanie, you mentioned if people were available or not, and I see your hand up, so I'll be right there. It might be their access to it or their literacy levels or even their cultural context about what works or doesn't. And your data collection might also be influenced by the resources that are available and the type of information that you need. So Stephanie, go ahead. I see that you have a question.
I was just wondering, okay, if I was doing a program and then one of the little kids had told another kid about some form of abuse, how would I be able to go about that? Who can I contact? Because I don't want to get any parents in trouble. That kid could be just, it actually happened to me a few years ago, like where there was an incident that had happened with my kids, and I didn't know who to call and what to do. I did call the RCMP and they did an investigation, but nothing really came out of it. However, the kid's parents were, and I just thought, okay.
Yeah, so
what can I do without?
So we covered that in the upcoming learning event, but you've already done that one. It's called PE 102 Positive Program Experiences. So for Isabel, Peter, and Deanne, that's coming up next month. Stephanie, I can send you the link. Basically, what you need to do is either exactly what you did do. If you think that there's sort of an imminent danger or something, then you would contact the RCMP. But you could also, you know, if you're unsure, I would say the first step is to talk to your supervisor, your SAO, your CAO, like that. If it, you know, if it's something that happened in the past, you don't think that there's any imminent danger to that child. That's the course that I would do and have two brains figure it out. There's definitely different legislation for each jurisdiction across Canada. So I can send you the link for NWT if you want. Perfect. Thanks. Good question. Thank you. Okay, so we talked about how data collection is affected by the purpose of your evaluation. So when you choose the tools that you're going to use to collect your data, what you want to do is remember that there's many different types of tools, and there's pros and cons or advantages and disadvantages to each one. So the other thing I want you to think about is if you only use one type of tool, that's okay. But if you use a number of different ones and they all point to the same information, your results or your findings are much stronger. So if you use multiple sources of information, multiple tools to collect data, you have a much stronger, convincing, compelling evaluation. So if you can, I just would like to pause and ask you guys to open that shared document if you can. And if not, I am going to make sure that I talk you through it very clearly just in case it's difficult, Stephanie, for you to access on your phone. So let me explain how we're going to do this. So on this, in this document, and now I got to find where I put it. There we go. In this document, we have some different columns and we have different types of tools. And some of these tools were introduced in the PowerPoint slides. And there's not really any right or wrong answer. I just wanted to go through these, talk about them, and kind of share some of your thoughts about them so that we end up populating or filling out this table so it's actually useful to you. So what we'll do then is I'm going to ask each person to choose one tool. So if you're in there, and again, Stephanie, don't worry about it if it doesn't work on your phone. If you're in there, just go in by one of the tools. I see there's a few people in there, and put your name in after the tool. So if I'm in where the survey is, I'll show you. I'm going to put my name, Caroline, in there. So put your name in by at least one of the tools and two if you want to. And they can be ones that you know something about or ones that we'll learn together something about. And then what we're going to do is we're going to go around our circle. And we are going to do this. I'm going to put it in the message. And Stephanie, I see that you can see it. It might be hard to type on your phone. So you can just type in the chat if that works, and I can pop it into the document. So what I'd like you to do is when we go around our circle for one of the tools that you've chosen, I'd like you to explain what type of data you can collect with it, where you might get that data from, the timing of when you might use it, and how you might analyze that data. So hopefully that's clear. If not, that's totally okay, and we can also do this together. So Gianne, I see that you've got digital storytelling. If you recall from slide 29, that the type of data could be quantitative, qualitative, or mixed. What do you think it would be from, and we're going to start with you, Gianne, so you might want to unmute. Awesome. So you've got qualitative data. Perfect. So you guys can pop them in there if you want, but we'll keep going through with Gianne for the digital storytelling. What's the source of where you would get stories, Gianne? From people or from paper?
From the people. It's a more or less like interview, but the people will tell their story, you know, the lifetime story, or we are looking into, let's say, like your story, Caroline, right? So from there, how you went when you started and all this, right? So we can get info about, like, program, what are the programs you're running, or, like, how the program you're running, and how this is all happening, right? So that's the thing.
Yeah, so you'd probably be getting that, the source of where you'd be getting it from. And again, that on slide 30 is probably from people, right? So I'll type that in for you. When do you collect stories?
So we want to, like, see something in the... When we want to see a real, like, in 20 years, or like maybe 10 years, or like in the timeline, that timeline period, like people, how they have experienced the thing, right? So we want to know their experience, and from their experience, we want to get something out of that, qualitative data, or like it can be quantitative data also.
Yeah, so let's think about when you collect a story. So how likely is it that people are going to remember what happened to them 2 months or 2 years after an experience?
So we will put them in the short of, like, the on the paper or something? That's what you mean, Caroline?
Yeah, so the timing. So when do we collect this type of data? So for me, I want to collect stories and digital stories, which could be photos and things like that, as they happen, because then the experience that people have are a lot richer. So, for example, you might take your group of youth that you just took on the trip to the Canada Winter Games. If you had them share some photos and write a story of their experiences now, it would have much more impact than if you asked them to do that in 6 months. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you want to collect it during the experience or just shortly after, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Does that make sense what I'm looking for, everybody? Okay, so let's come back to how we might analyze that in a minute. We might have to go through some of those slides. Let's go to Peter. So Peter, you've chosen interviews. Do you want to share the type, the source, and the timing with us?
Yeah, sure. Like, I would say the type is mostly qualitative, but you could have quantitative components depending on how you structured the question. The source would evidently be people, because you can't interview paper. Timing, I struggle with a little bit. Like, I would say post, maybe during, but honestly, you could even do it pre, like, depending on what you were looking for. And it really does kind of depend. Yeah.
Sometimes we do what we call pre-post. So I just did an instructor trainer course for Red Cross over the weekend, and we had an evaluation that was pre and an evaluation that was post. So we collected that information before and after, and then you match the two and you look at the change over that time. So definitely you can do a pre or a post. If you have something that's running for a fairly long length of time and ongoing, you absolutely can do it during too. So perfect. Okay, we'll come back to analysis afterwards. So let's see. Isabel's dropped off. Okay, because she had to go. So Stephanie, you have picked observation, which is a really good one. So I wonder if you want to share what you've put in there. And Peter and Deanne, you guys go ahead and pick another one.
Okay, I think observation would be mixed because I would just make because
yeah, I think
observation. You can record the numbers and also, you know, like the participants, staff, and not only that, but I guess I would make an observation of who had shown up, like the demographic, like was it the majority adults versus kids, or okay, I know of a couple of people who are in wheelchairs, and you know what? I should have got them here. Like, that would be during. I'm like, oh, you know what? It runs programs a few times, and we do have a resident that is in a wheelchair. Already, she knows I will include her in programming, especially big community dinners or events, and I always make sure that she has, I book her transportation, and I let her know that she'll be picked up at a certain time and dropped off at a certain time.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing that you can think about with observation, think of the things that you might be looking for. So especially if you're maybe looking for changes in behavior. So I'm thinking of maybe an elders program or a program among youth that's designed to build relationships. You could ask people, you know, do you feel like you've got better relationships? Or you could observe and watch what happens. So the first time you have five elders in a room, one of them looks very isolated, doesn't interact with anyone. The next program, maybe they talk to one person. The next person, they talk to three, and by the end, you notice a change in their behavior. That's a qualitative observation. Maybe you have a child that you're working on more positive interactions, positive behaviors. You know, Peter, maybe with you with fitness, you're observing people's techniques, right? And maybe you're not going to give them feedback on everything, but you notice that as you work through a program, the techniques in using equipment have changed, right? So that's observation. And that can give you some very rich, like you put down, Stephanie, both quantitative and qualitative information. So thanks. That's really good. Peter and Dion, you guys have picked a couple more. Dion, which one did you pick now? Focus group?
Yep.
You want to share with us what a little bit about focus groups and how you see the type and the source and the timing?
Yeah, so the focus group is it's like group collecting the data. It's a more or less like it's like interview, but with a group of people, like 6 to 12 people in a group. And the timeline is it's hard to manage like the 6 to 12 people like getting all together, you know, at the same time. That's one thing. And then second is working out with, so there is like similarity and dissimilarity, right? So we need to work on that part. That's very important. And they give us like very concrete concrete result out of that, the discussion. Yeah.
Yeah, so focus group, I noticed you've got pre down here. Do you want to explain how you might use it before something that you're evaluating?
Yeah, so we can give a topic to the group, right? And then from that topic, we can start working on that, like getting the info on that from everyone.
Yeah, so before you do something, so Peter, one example might be with your Real Leader program. Let's say you've never done it before. You could have focus groups in communities, letting people know great ways to do it, but you could also use it afterwards, right? So it can be pre, it can be used during a longer program, like Peter's Real Leader program, to find out what's working and what's not and what you might want to change. And it can also be looked at afterwards. Afterwards, I would think more of using perhaps your partners, like if you've done a project with other partners, you might want to do a focus group with them to find out their perspectives on what worked and what didn't. So thanks, Gian. Peter, I see that you've popped in for photo voice, right?
Yep.
And interviews?
Yeah, photo voice is the other one I did.
Okay.
I actually didn't know what it was, so I had to Google it because I couldn't find it in the PowerPoint. But essentially, it's a qualitative method of research where you have people in a community bring forth a photo, and then they provide an interview about a topic and like explain why they chose that photo. So I would think of an example, like let's say you needed to build like more playgrounds in a community. Maybe they would take a picture of like a rundown playground and be like, hey, look, like no one uses this. It's made of like, but that wood, remember that old pressure treated wood, needs an update, and they would present that. Or someone else would take another thing and they would take a picture of it and present it and be like, this is why I chose this image because this is what I think we should be updating. That's kind of what my interpretation of it was. And so for the timing of that, I mean, obviously it's people because you're interviewing people. The timing would be pre and post. Like I think you could do one where you're demonstrating it before a change would have happened, and let's say people funded something, and then they could see the post and see the impact that it's made. Maybe they had a picture of a playground with like 30 kids on it after it's been built. But I don't actually know out of this technique very well, but I assume that you could probably do that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you can also do it during. Think of, I don't know if you've ever been to an event like a wedding where they put, this is probably predating you guys, but there used to be these little disposable camera things, kind of like a Polaroid, right? And you could put them out on the tables and people could take pictures of their favorite moments and then they would go and develop them. This is a long time ago. But my daughter's done that with Polaroids. So you could have, you know, you could have a program running with youth on a regular basis or with elders on a regular basis and have two or three Polaroid cameras sitting around and ask people just to snap a photo of something that they really like. And then you start putting them all up, and at the end, you've got this collage of everything that they liked about their program. So that's another way of doing it during. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And it's just sort of depicting, like, the impact, right, in a visual way.
Yeah, you can also do it like I've used it where share some photos of what you like about your community. And very different than what your community needs, right? What do you like about your community? And I bet you get more photos about parks and trees and things like that than you would of facilities. So there might be people in there. So it's an interesting way to learn people's perspective through their eyes.
Yeah. Because the key is that, like, the participants are creating the photos. So they're the ones choosing what is valuable. It's like a really good way of generating stuff that's important.
Yes, it's very creative because then you can ask them to share the story behind that photo as well. Like, you know, I see you've got a picture of a tree here. What is it about trees that you like? Or what is it about this that was meaningful? Or you've got a picture of crayons and paper on the table. What was meaningful about that? So it's kind of a cool technique. It's just hard because if we have people in those photos, then we need permission to share them. But if we can do photos of things or activities, then that's another way of getting around it. So thanks, Peter. Dion, did you pick coming around to Stephanie. Stephanie, did it work for you to pick another one or not? Not quite. So let's just take a look here before you jump in. I'm just looking at the time too. So you've got a thematic analysis down as for your focus group. So we haven't really got into analysis. I prompted that you could look at slides 52 and 53. So when we start to analyze our data, we sort of organize it first, but then we have to look at it. And so there's lots of different ways that we can look at our data. So if it's quantitative, we might want to do things like count the numbers or types. We might calculate the frequency. How many times did we have 100% attendance? Or, you know, out of 10 programs, how many were canceled because of the weather? We might compare and contrast things. Like in this program with our 6 to 8 year olds, what was different to this program with our 9 to 12 year olds? And this is where Excel can come in really handy because there's lots of calculations you can do with Excel. So that's more for quantitative data. With qualitative data, it takes more time to work with it. You want to do things like, I see that you've written themes down, Deanne, and you're exactly right. We're looking for themes, categories, patterns, relationships, but we're also looking for things that stand out and we go, wow, I didn't know that. So not only are you looking for things that are common that you can kind of group together and you can say, lots of people felt this way, you're also thinking about, wow, somebody mentioned this. I hadn't thought about it like that. And sometimes that's something to explore a little bit further. You can also, when you're doing your analysis of qualitative data, pull out quotes that help tell the story. So this morning I just went through, you know how I asked you guys to fill out those feedback forms at the end of every single learning event? I just pulled out some great quotes from Peter and from Stephanie. So I appreciate that. It's really helpful for me to highlight what's working well or what I need to change. So that's a little bit about how we analyze data. So go in and just jot down for the ones that you picked. How would you analyze the data? So a hint, qualitative might be one way, quantitative might be another way, mixed might be a combination of the two. Great. So Guillaume's got patterns, pieces of information for a focus group. Here you've got feelings. Yeah. Like, it's funny, hey? We often don't share our feelings, but they're a really important underlying thing that indicates attitudes and satisfaction. Like, it can sort of point to a number of different things. And you've got, so patterns and pieces of observation or important pieces of information, sorry. And Stephanie, for mixed, it might be calculations, like you said, you know, how many of this. So you might be doing calculations, but you might also be interpreting what you see. So you might have to, like, interpretation is a lot of what you can do with that type of analysis too. So while you guys are filling that in, I'm just going to go through the remaining ones. And I like that you're in the document. If you have any questions or thoughts about these, if you really like it, give it a star. If you think you'd like to try it, just put this would be interesting to try. Or if you'd like more information, put more information. Mapping is a really cool one. Sometimes we use community mapping. It's usually for a larger activity about, you know, the community design layout. It can highlight a lot of things, like we use it for active transportation, for example. You know, if you mapped Whitehorse and accessibility of recreation, you would find that it's very challenging for people to access recreation, and you would probably see some of the barriers that are involved in that. Sharing circles. Personally, I like sharing circles. They're a little different to focus groups because they might be a little bit more open. Often what we're doing is a sharing circle. Feedback forms, I think everyone's pretty familiar with feedback forms. You can collect both types of information from feedback forms, both quantitative and qualitative. And usually when I ask people about evaluation, the first thing that comes to mind is feedback forms. Make sure you keep them simple, and you can use numbers or symbols. And, you know, sometimes people get really tired of forms, so I do things like flip chart feedback. Like I might just have a flip chart on their way out the door and three different types of stickers, like a happy face, a sad face, or a straight face, and they can choose a sticker and put it up. So there's different ways that you can do that. Surveys are structured so that people fill out the same information or answer the same questions. So there's a structure to surveys. There's lots of ways we can administer surveys. Usually they're fairly quick and easy and reasonably inexpensive. At RPAY, where Peter works, we also use surveys for reporting and collecting that type of information. So you can do that too. Some of the other things in here, journals and diaries can be useful if you're doing a longer program and you're really trying to, you know, help somebody on a journey to become more physically fit or to connect better with people in their community. So those types of things can be useful for a diary. Dotmocracy is a really simple one. It's one that you can just use right there and then, you know, to choose something. Like, you know, how many, if you had $100 and you give everybody 10 dots and each dot is worth $100, where are you going to spend your money? So you can have some options and choices. Program documents as well. I think we've talked about that. Make sure you use your program documents for evaluation. They're really rich sources of information, even comparing a budget from one year to the next. That can be very helpful too. So you can see there's lots of different ways that we can collect data for information. So when you're working on your when you're working on your evaluation plan, try and choose more than one way. I'm not expecting you to choose like 10 because that's a lot of work. But it can be nice if you choose something like a feedback form, then to match that with something else like photo voice or observation or a sharing circle. Stephanie, a few calls ago, you mentioned community meetings. That's another great opportunity to collect qualitative information too. Or even just comment cards. I imagine, I don't know, Deanna, if Squash Yukon has a little comment box at Better Bodies that people can put share their comments in, because there's not always someone there. So is that something you guys use sometimes?
Yes, Karen, we use the comment box. We have it, right? So people, like, if any, like, it's a feedback box. So you can write the thing, right? If you like something, you don't like something, or you needed some other services from us, or, yeah.
Great, yeah. So there's lots of different ways. And on slide 47, I've got other things. Like there's music videos. So I don't know if you've seen any of it. There's a really cool one that Selkirk First Nation did with their youth. I think I shared that in one of our other learning events. There's things like World Cafes. There's murals, like even, you know, painting a great big wall, which is a really cool thing for youth to do. Some people might like things like quilting. So there's lots of different ways that you can bring in different tools for evaluation, so it's not just, oh my God, we have another feedback form, which sometimes is a reaction that your participants might get. So try and keep it fairly creative and be broad, and it's more fun for you, but it's also more fun for your participants. So I'm going to leave, like, let's move away from this document for now, but you can see that, you know, if we had more people on this call, we would have probably filled in more, but I think we've touched some of the key points there. I would like to ask you one last question. Let's see, Jan, can I go over again on mapping? Would you like me to cover that again before we move on?
Yes, please.
Yeah, so there's different ways to do mapping. So mapping can be physical geography, like, you know, what do you see in your community? Mapping can also be, I've seen it done. Have you ever seen the graphic facilitators, people who, it's like they draw a picture of what the conversation is? That's a type of mapping too. Those are really cool. If you Google graphic facilitation, I think that's a really neat experience to be involved in. So you would have something like a sharing circle and have somebody mapping your conversation and seeing where it takes you. The other way that I've used mapping is I actually did this with a grade 8 and 9 class in Watson Lake, and I just asked them to draw on a board the places in their community that they use. And so it was really interesting to see what they use and where they go to, and then you can explore that about a bit further. And Peter's got another example there, political views mapped across the country. Absolutely. So there's a lot of things that we can graphically show. You could show culture, diversity, population, you know, in your community. You could show, you know, maybe you could even map, if you have a small enough community, the neighborhoods and where people participate a bit more strongly and why maybe it's that neighborhood. So for Peter and Deanne, who know Whitehorse, I would think that people who live in Valley View are much more likely to use the Canada Game Center. So that's sort of an idea around mapping. Go ahead, Stephanie, you've got a question?
More like a comment. There was an idea that I came up with just recently, and a lot of people are interested. I was thinking about the personality of our community at this time, and I thought a good idea would be to do like an illustrated map of our community where everybody...
I think
you can add like a little bubble. And I wanted to make this a community project, so then I can have this printed out and everybody can have a copy of this map that they can bring home or have at the community hall or whatever. But I thought it was just such a fantastic idea for everybody to contribute just a little bit of their idea, thought, picture of their house or something like that. And everybody loves the idea, and this is something that I'm going to go forth and do.
Yeah, so either find somebody who's like an artist that can help you with that, or look up graphic facilitators. There's people that are actually trained to do that, and it's super cool. And then you get this amazing, amazing picture. We did it once maybe about 15 years ago about what the journey to a healthier Yukon looks like. So that's really neat. And then if you have people who like quilting, some people take that one step further and create a quilt that goes up on the wall in their community hall or something like that. So good, great idea. Okay, so let's just come around. I just want to ask you one last question. And my question is, what are some things that you might need to consider when you choose and use data collection tools? So the things that we just talked about are all tools for choosing or for collecting data. So what are some of the considerations that you might need to have? We sort of alluded to some of them. I just wanted to come back to this part of the conversation. So, Peter, I'm going to put you on the spot first because I put Deanne on the spot a couple of times. What are some considerations for choosing and using data collection tools?
Well, the evaluation purpose or goal would directly be influenced by what you're trying to achieve and collect, sorry.
Yeah, so can you see that some tools might work better with the purpose that you've identified for your evaluation as compared to other ones?
Yeah, like even just like using qualitative versus quantitative tools or both. Like if you need numbers for funders, like how many people are participating or how many people are getting physically active, you're not going to really look to do interviews about how they felt. I mean, you might want to do that, but you need to show this other information first, maybe, or it's of higher importance. Just in, like, even though they're both important, it's just in this scenario, that one is more important.
Yeah, and for what you're doing, something like program documents might be an important choice because you need to be able to break apart, like you're talking about sort of processes that lead to people becoming real leaders and support them through it. So some of those program documents might be an important place to start, right? So, and past applications and feedback on reports and things like that. So I think, yeah, so definitely your purpose of your evaluation is a really important thing that should drive the tools that you choose to use. Stephanie, what's another consideration that you might think about when you're choosing what tools to use to collect data?
I would say literacy, being able to communicate with, I wouldn't say literacy. Okay, for instance, okay, if I'm doing an after school program and I want some ideas from the kids, I'm not going to just give them like a little sheets and say, okay, check this one and check that one, tell me which one is better. I would have to talk to them directly. Or to someone who isn't able to write or read. So I guess considerations is language, communication, comprehension, and having, because someone can have dyslexia. Maybe they, or not even the full spectrum, but maybe they can read it but not fully comprehend it. So having to communicate with them and knowing that they understand or helping them understand the question or what kind of information you would really like to get. Because maybe their interpretation of that question could be completely what you weren't expecting or what you wanted. So I guess communication, comprehension, understanding.
Yeah, and that's particularly important in the North. Like you kind of mentioned even age too, right? So, you know, age is definitely a factor that we might, that might come into it, cultural perspectives. And there's also a little bit about, I want to say maybe fatigue, like people getting tired with the same types of tools. Like David was telling me about the number of feedback forms he has to collect for his program, but it's the same people participating in the programs. And I'm like, oh my gosh, those people will get, you know, tired of filling out the same feedback form. So then you don't get quality information. So then what's the point of even using that type of tool? And also, you know, scales on tools. So a scale numbered 1 to 5, some people think 1 is the best and some people think 1 is the worst. So how you know, what you're going to use too. And Deanne, I see you mentioned like keeping the number of questions not too big. So are you thinking of being respectful of people's time and keeping it manageable?
Yeah, I was trying to make the note, and then I just clicked the enter button and it popped it into. Yeah, so whenever we're going for the questionnaire or like the survey, so we don't make it very lengthy, right? That's the first thing. Like people don't like spend like 30 minutes or 40 minutes doing one questionnaire or survey thing, right? So that is the one point we need to look into. And then the literacy part, as Stephanie mentioned, yeah, the question, like our survey or the question is supposed to be very understandable, right? People, they can, it's supposed to be in the very simple language, not very complex, you know, and people, they can understand. So that is one, another thing we need to look into also. And we need to look also the population. If we have bigger population, so the quality of the data will be better with us. And definitely the question, so the question supposed to be appropriate for the age, sex, or like for whole diversity, and really targeting, right, what piece of information we are looking into. So it's about to be very specific, the questions also, yeah. And definitely it should not be the, like, the criticizing something. It's supposed to be always the positive questions you need to put into.
Yeah, so those are a lot of good considerations. So when you guys are working this week on your next part of your evaluation plan, what you want to make sure that you do then is really take the time to look at the purpose, as Peter mentioned, for your evaluation. Look at the questions that you have, and please make sure that if you, Deanne and Stephanie, do that part and send it to me first for my feedback, because then it'll make the second half easier. And then really look at your design or your method. So what type of data you'll collect, where you'll get it from, and the tools that you could use. So be very thoughtful about that. Don't just, I'm going to do a feedback form. So try and take the time to think through all of these considerations that you just shared. So that wraps up this week's call. We have one call next week. And for those of you in the Yukon, the time changes everywhere else. So Stephanie, you guys have a clock change on the weekend. Your conference call is still at 11 o'clock. But Deanne and Peter, we're on at 10 o'clock now, moving next week. So it's almost like everybody else has changed his clock, but they don't have to worry about it. We have to worry about it. So just know that our conference call times starting next week for Yukoners will shift, and I will send out a reminder of that. If you have any questions about your required learning activities or about this, about RP 102, evaluation and recreation, please stay on the call and I'll try and answer them for you. Otherwise, thanks for joining us. Stephanie, thanks for finding a parking spot and joining us on what looks like a really nice sunny day where you are. And I look forward to Deanne and Peter. We'll chat tomorrow in the learning event. Stephanie will talk to you next week. So, merci chaud, merci. Have a great afternoon. And hang on if you have any questions.